Thank you, Jimmy. We're going to finish up the last couple of weeks here, this week and next week, talking about healing. And I want to look at a story, one of the most powerful stories in the Bible. It involves so much pain and hurt, and something that most of us can relate to. Because when we think about healing and the areas in life where we need healing, very often, and we've talked about this for, you know, the past couple of months, about the physical healing that we need, how we need to entrust God to care for us enough to deal with our physical pains, how sometimes those physical pains are even manifested from a place where it starts with some emotional hurts. But what I want to talk about today is faith, healing, but from a place where, let's face it, sometimes we give up. Sometimes we give up on the idea that we can be healed. Sometimes we lose sight of the fact that not just God can heal anything, that God can fix anything, but we have to ask ourselves, does he even want to? Does he want to do it, and does he want to do it for me? Because even if you do have enough faith and you believe that God can heal anything in your life, that he can rebuild and repair and restore anything, sometimes the faith is that God not can do it, but that he's willing to do it for me. Sometimes we look at something and we think it's too far gone. And maybe if God had, you know, maybe found this thing when I was younger, maybe if he had worked on this thing at an earlier stage, then maybe there would be some hope. But it took you too long. You weren't there when I really needed it. And so we can oftentimes lose sight of what God is actually doing in a situation. You know, we talked about that patience. We looked at the gentleman who, you know, Jairus was his name, and how he had the daughter, and they go on this way, and he had to wait. But what happens when you wait and you look at something and it's dead? You look at something and you think, this is too broken. And so I want to talk about this today and next week, but today we're going to look at a story of a man. Many of us know this story about Lazarus, but I want to read through it. And I want to really challenge us to think about this as individuals, as a person, where your brokenness may be, because your brokenness may be in a different place. Your hurt and your pain and where you need the healing may be different than the next man. And so I want to talk about this. The title of the sermon I've given is Beating a Dead Horse. You know, most of us know that saying. It talks about you're beating a dead horse. You're going over and over and over and over again over something that can't be brought back. And we have to ask ourselves, do we have faith that God can heal something that in our minds seems to be dead? You know, last week I shared this, said the wound was probably not your fault, but the healing is your responsibility. And when something is dead, when something's so far gone and so removed that it seems hopeless, the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is our responsibility in that moment? Sometimes the responsibility we have is very simply to be willing to trust God and follow him, even if it doesn't always make sense how he's going to get out of this. Because, you know, when we have faith, God can kind of be like those shows we watch where, you know, like I remember that show 24. It's like, I always know that he's going to get out of this by the time I get to the end of the show. You know, once I get to the end of the hour, I know something's going to happen. I don't know how he's going to fix this one, but he's going to fix it. And yet we have to ask ourselves, do we believe that before it's over, before it's all said and done, that God's going to be able to fix even my life too? That he'll be able to heal even what's broken here with me. want to look at John chapter 11, if you want to turn there. John chapter 11, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and his sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair." So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." Pause here for a second. We see that this is not just some guy who says, "Hey, I need you to come, you know, heal my daughter, heal my friend, heal my mom." No, this is a friend of Jesus. It says this is the one whom you love. "Lord, the one you love is sick." These are people who respect Jesus. They follow him. They have placed their faith in him. It says that, you know, just for clarity, just in case anybody didn't know, this is the Mary who poured perfume on your feet and wiped it with your hair. So these are not strangers to Jesus. And sometimes we have to remember that Jesus isn't just talking to the lost when he's talking to the people who are broken, the people who need healing. Sometimes he's talking to those who've been following him, who've placed their faith in him for a while. It's like this message of healing and faith beyond what other people consider possible, this isn't just for all of those other people out there. Sometimes it's for the ones who are close to him. Sometimes it's for us. Continuing on, it says, "When he heard this, Jesus said, 'This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, and then he said to his disciples, 'Let us go back to Judea.' 'But Rabbi,' they said, 'a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back?' Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light.' After he had said this, he went on to tell them, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up.' His disciples replied, 'Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better.' Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep." We see here that sometimes, even when it's explained to us, sometimes even when God tries to show us something, we don't always quite understand. Continuing on, he says, "So then he told them plainly, 'Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him.' Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, 'Let us also go, that we may die with him.'" Thomas had a little bit of zeal, but he didn't quite understand, right? No knowledge. And as we see this unfolding, as we read about this, what we see here, it says Jesus waited a couple of days. It says that Jesus didn't immediately jump right in and hurry to be there. He took his time. He took his time getting there. You know, sometimes God takes his time showing up to a situation. He even says, "And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe." Sometimes we don't understand what it is that God is doing. We don't understand why God allows people to be in pain. We don't understand why he waits. If you could have fixed this before, well, why didn't you get there sooner? Well, why didn't you show up? And yet, God wants us to follow him to experience the healing, even if we don't quite understand how and why everything is unfolding the way that it is. Sometimes he wants us to follow him because it's through the journey, it's through that process that we actually grow, that we learn, that we can see his glory. Because if he just shows up and he fixes it, sometimes we still don't understand. And the only way to truly understand is to go through it and walk with him. Normally, this would be the place where I would put a slide, I put a picture or something. But I left this blank on purpose. No pictures, no quotes, nothing. I want you to think about in your life, in your experiences, something that maybe you've given up on. Maybe you think God can't fix it. Maybe you think it can't be done. There's this area of healing. It could be physical. It could be spiritual. It could be emotional. And God just can't quite fix that. It's too far gone. Or maybe I don't deserve it. Maybe I don't deserve God to heal this thing because it's my fault that I'm here anyway. We talked about this. But every person in here on some level can relate to what we've just read and what we're going to continue to read, where we see people who are desperate and they're saying, Jesus, help me. I know you can hear me. You know my heart. You know I'm sincere. You know how bad this hurts. Where are you at? Why haven't you shown up right now? You know what's going on with my daughter or my son. You know what's going on in my marriage. You know what's going on in my relationship. You know what's going on with me personally. You know the hurts I've experienced. Where are you? What's taking you so long? Are you going to let this die? Jesus assured them this is not going to end in death. And yet sometimes it's like, yeah, I heard you, Jesus, but I'm also looking at this thing that's so far gone that it's dead. Continuing on to verse 17, it says, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. So he hadn't just died. He'd been in the dead. He'd been in this tomb for so long that he had already started to break down. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. Jesus is really taking his time, huh? When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Pause here. See, you get the setting here. This wasn't just a situation where this had just happened. They've already started the process. He's already been put in the tomb. They're already going through the grieving. They're not even thinking about the possibility that anything Jesus could do at this point, even though he's powerful, even though we've seen him do so many things, certainly he couldn't do anything about this. Continuing, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Everyone was so fixated on the fact that had he been there, this would not have happened. Had you just showed up when I first called you, had you responded quicker, God, maybe that brokenness, maybe this pain, maybe what I need healing for right now would not have happened. And yet, we see here clearly God saying, yeah, but if I had been there to fix that, you would have never been able to grow. You would have never been able to see what's going to happen next. They had expectations of Christ. And it wasn't just expectations because of his power and his ability to heal and fix something. He says, could not the one who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? But they're saying, it's not just some man. This is your friend. We're your friends. You see, Jesus wept. He had compassion. He had hurt. He had pain because he saw these people who were sad. Even though he knew what he was going to do, he hurt for them. He knew he could do something about it, but he hurt for them. And yet, you can imagine how they felt. Yeah, I appreciate your tears, Jesus. I appreciate the fact that you have compassion. But if you had just been here, you could have saved my marriage. If you had been here, you could have saved my son or my daughter. If you had been here, you could have help me while my kids were still young. If you had been here, fill in the blank. If you had been here. Sometimes we have to get over our unmet expectations that are in the past in order to experience the power of God. In order to be able to really see that although that was important and although I understand how bad that hurt you, you needed this. You need to see what I'm going to do next in your life so that all that pain and hurt from the past can make sense. Sometimes we expect God, and we even doubt, we even wonder, you know, like we see where the sister there, they're kind of like, well, yeah, I know he's going to rise again at the resurrection. He's saying, no, I'm talking about now. But we remove that even from the realm of possibility for God, who there is no limit to his possibilities, because we're stuck on an unmet expectation in the past. If you are God, if you truly have compassion, if you truly care about me, then why didn't you fix this earlier? Why didn't you fix it when it happened? And so our faith is shaken. Our faith is twisted because of an unmet expectation in the past. Here's a quote. Not sure exactly who this person is. It says, keep the faith. The most amazing things in life tend to happen right at the moment you're about to give up hope. You know, it's like Jesus is saying, hey, you know what? You haven't seen anything yet. And yet it's hard to believe that when you're going through it, right? You're sitting there, you're thinking, well, how can you possibly fix something that's been dead for days? How can you possibly say that this is not going to end in death? It has already ended in death, Jesus. He's dead. We've been mourning for days, and you took a couple extra days, and you waited. How is this possibly not going to end in death when they're already dead? I like this one. It says, where is your God now? Of course, if you don't see what this is, it's a cup, everybody. It's a cup. The hole's not in there. You can't put the straw in. It's a joke. It's a joke. You'll get this later on your way home. All right. But sometimes we do that, and there here this quote says, dear God, if today I lose my hope, please remind me that your plans are better than my dreams. Anything I could hope for, your plans are even better than that. I showed a picture of the cup without the hole in it, and it's like, well, I can't put the straw in. And see, we laugh at that, if you get it, you know. You laugh at it, but here's the thing. We look at that, As humans, we think that's no big deal. You just take the lid off and put the straw in, or you drink it right. It's not a problem, right? And yet we forget our hurts and our pains. That's what that looks like to God. That's what God thinks when he sees what we perceive to be a problem or something that can't be overcome. God, I can't get this straw into the top of the cup because this was a defect coming out of the factory and there's no hole. And God's like, take the top off. All I got to do is take the top off. But God, how? And God's like, I'm God. I just take the top off. I'll just go ahead and, you know, do what I have to do. Continuing on, verse 38. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. It's one of Jesus' most powerful and impactful miracles in bringing his friend back from the dead. But right before this happens, literally right before Lazarus, you can imagine those people that see Lazarus get up. You can imagine the shock and the awe and how magnificent it was, the relief, the tears. And we see this and we look at this, and yet in our own lives, do we believe that the exact same power, the exact same glory, the exact same healing presence that Jesus had in bringing Lazarus back from the dead? 4 days later, he brings him back from the dead, body starting to decompose. Would she say, there's a bad odor. There are things in our life, there are relationships, there are hurts that we have. They've gotten to the point that they've been dead for so long that they're starting to stink, that they're starting to decompose. And yet, we look at this, do we believe that the same power can work in our lives? Often God has to completely break a situation. Something has to be completely destroyed for us to be able to believe in the power of Christ. You know, sometimes we have to get to the very end of all hope. Because if God fixes it beforehand, see, then we might rationalize or reason it away. See, then we might say, well, maybe it's really not that. Well, you know, it was just you were lucky, or you just had some good, you know, situations, you know, good things happen to befall you. No, sometimes it has to be completely broken. Sometimes you have to get to that point where you have no other hope, so that when he does bring it back, it can be attributed to and accredited to no one else but God. Do we have those situations in our lives? Do we have that person or that thing or that relationship or that someone that it's dead? We've given up. And we don't believe that there can be any healing there. Not even necessarily because you're not willing to do what is necessary for the healing. You know, we see the sisters here. They're like, they went, they did what was necessary. They went and got Jesus. They sent a message to him. They told him in enough time for Jesus to get there, but maybe the other party wasn't willing. Do we believe that God is powerful enough to bring anything back from the dead? In closing, I'll ask a few questions. Am I willing to break the law and touch the untouchable in obedience and reverence to Christ? You know, one of the things that often gets overlooked in this is that Jesus was constantly pushing boundaries and breaking the law, because what did he do? He says, I'm going to go, and I'm not only going to deal with blood and things like that, I'm going to touch a dead body, which was totally against Jewish law. Sometimes we don't want to touch those dead things. We don't want to go and be a part of it. We say that's already too far gone. Leave that alone. That wouldn't be proper decorum and etiquette. And yet we see here that Christ said, no, I am the resurrection. I'm the life. I can do all things. I can do anything. I'm not limited to this. Do we limit God's healing power in our lives and in others because we're just not willing to touch something that other people consider to be untouchable? Do I believe in God's healing at his word, or in my heart am I resigned that certain things are too broken for him to fix? Do we really believe at his word when he says this will not end in death? Do we really believe that, or do we think that at some point certain things are too far gone? Because it's easy to say that, yes, I serve and I worship and I believe in this God of all the universe, but do we actually believe that he can fix anything in my life too? Because we wouldn't dare say that God is limited. We wouldn't dare say that God can't heal anything, but do we actually believe it? It's like he said at the end of that verse 43 and 44, where he says, but I told you that if you believed in me, that it would be done. Do we actually believe that God can do anything and heal anything at his word? Do I lack faith in the power of God's healing, or do I doubt his desire to heal what appears to be dead in my life? Do I believe that it is my faith that makes me worthy, or my cleanliness? You know, this goes back to this idea of having compassion, because, you know, lots of times we understand that, you know, when it says Jesus wept, that, you know, he has pity on us, right? He cares about us. He cares for us. And yet we forget that there's a difference between pity and compassion. We forget that it's not just about, you know, my cleanliness. Because sometimes we can almost feel like, well, maybe we're not worthy. And so he's not going to have compassion on me because I don't deserve it, because it's my fault. I'm right here looking at this, and I'm the blame for this. So why would God even come to heal me? Why would he even want to do this? And we forget that it's not our cleanliness, it's not our righteousness that's actually what makes us worthy. It's not us and how good we are that says, okay, well, this is why God is going to touch my life. No, actually, it's our faith. And finally, getting back to this pity and compassion, am I convinced that God really cares about my life and my pain? Does God show pity for my life or compassion for me? Sometimes we don't even honestly believe that God really has compassion. You know, the difference between pity and compassion: pity is described as a feeling of sympathy, sharing in suffering for another human being or another living creature, whereas compassion is mercy and empathy, a desire to do something, and is defined as both an emotion and a virtue. Why? Because when you have compassion, it means that you actually can do something about it. You know, there's a lot of things I have pity for. If somebody falls down here and goes into some type of medical emergency, I can pray for them, I can have pity for them, but I'm not trained as a doctor. There's nothing I can do for them. And we forget that God is not powerless in that way. God is, he's not saying, no, I have pity on you. He's saying, I have compassion. You know, my willingness to have compassion on my children is unlimited. Compassion is not just defined as I care about your pain, but it also says that I can do something about your pain. I can do something about your hurt. But just like Jesus told him, hey, show me where he is. Lots of times we have to be willing to show God exactly where it is. We have to be willing to open ourselves up and say, God, this is where the pain is. This is where I need the healing. And I believe that you don't just care, but that you're willing to do something about it. Do we actually believe that God wants to do something about our healing? Do we go to God in such a way that we have faith that he wants to do something about our healing? Do you believe that he wants you to be healed of whatever it is? You know, we see here where they take him to the tomb, and sometimes we're not willing to take God to the tomb. We're not willing to take him to where it hurts. We're not willing to expose ourselves and put ourselves in that place because we think it's already dead, it already stinks, it's not something anybody wants to touch. We have to ask ourselves, are we willing to take God to that place where we need to be healed? Is that something that you need help with now? If so, then we have our song of invitation. Come forward and ask for that prayer, that heart, so that you can be willing to open up and let God to that place for something that you think is dead, something that you've let go of years ago. Maybe you've given up on the idea that you can even be close to God, or for that matter, given up on the idea that you can truly know who God is, because it's so confusing and it's so hurt, and I've been through so much, I don't even know that God exists. Maybe you've gotten to the point where you think God's not even really going to come. He's not even really going to show up. Are you in that place today? God wants to be there. He wants to heal your pain. He wants to show you, and the reason why you've gone through so much is because he ultimately wants to show you his glory. His way is a better way. Do you know what his way is, and do you know what his way is for your life? Do you know what it is that God is going to do next to heal you in that place that you've let go of? Do you want to know? Do you want to give that to God? Do you need help with that? Do you need a relationship with God that maybe you don't have? Maybe you've never had. If so, don't let today go by without seeking him and asking him to heal that broken place, even that dead place, even that place that, by all accounts, anybody looking at it would say, there is no hope. Put your hope in God. If you need prayer, if you would like to seek out that healing, if you would like to seek out what it is that you need to do to find that healing, please come forward as we stand and sing our song of invitation.